Hello and welcome to this week's installment of Nucleus Investment Insights. This week, our view is on the bull case for holding global stocks in 2021. 2020 was a year of surprises. There was the speed at which the pandemic escalated, the severity of the lockdowns, the size of the government stimulus measures globally, and the magnitude of equity market rebounds. Perhaps the biggest surprise is that global equities, as of this week, have gained around 70% since the nadir of the market falls in March, an outcome few would have predicted during a global pandemic. Even as vaccines are rolled out, low central bank policy rates are keeping cheap money issuance above pre-pandemic levels. Governments with big budget deficits are set to increase debt by another $10 trillion this year as political and social pressures make it hard to curb spending, further fueling the stock market mania. At home, the ASX, with a large exposure to natural resources and financial services, has strategists expecting the continued rotation towards value companies such as banks and miners at the expense of growth and technology. But will high levels of monetary and fiscal support, coupled with the kicker from vaccine deployment, be strong enough to support growing activity and earnings? Here to share his thoughts on the bull case for holding shares in 2021, I'm joined by Nucleus Wells Head of Investments, Damien Klassen. Hello to you, Damien.
Hi, Tim.
Good to have you on. And just a quick reminder that before we get started, if you haven't already, please subscribe and click on the notification bell to be notified of when we go live or have a new webinar to watch, or follow us on your preferred podcast platform. We also ask if you'd like to take a moment to click like on the video now to help our show grow. And for those listening in live, feel free to drop in your questions in the YouTube live stream chat to have them answered along the way. So let's jump into the agenda for today. First off, we have liquidity times three. So I think you're trying to drive home a point here, Damien.
Yeah, absolutely. Big reason is for all these stock market rises is liquidity and looking to see when we can see the end of that. So liquidity. We'll run through the whole raft of different things where that's showing up. Not valuation is as well as is in there. You need to have a. We'll run through some areas in terms of valuation where you can sort of pick up some value, but I think you do need to have more of a momentum view if you've got a bullish call on the market for this year. And I guess what we're trying to put together is the case for it that actually seems reasonable at the moment. Mm-hmm. Whether we've hit a short term top or whatever, there's certainly going to be movements up and down within that. But I guess as an overall as an overall theme for 2021, what are we seeing as the reasons to be bullish?
Sure.
The earnings side has been very strong, but it was just seen this latest reporting season. It's pretty much done from a global perspective. The Aussie one's still in its early days, but very, very strong earnings. Then the reflation trade as well.
Okay. Look, yeah, fantastic. Some great points there. So let's jump into it. So. Liquidity. Let's kick off. You've got a great chart here.
So start with the Fed balance sheet. So and this is true in Europe. It's true in Australia, Japan, China. Pick your central bank. They're all pumping as much money as they can into the economies. Interest rates are low. They're going to stay low. There's no expectation at all of interest rates rising this year.
Mm-hmm.
There is going to be, we're expecting a bit of an inflation shock, and we're going to talk about that in more detail next week.
Yep.
We don't think it's going to be real. We think it's a very temporary inflation issue,
mm-hmm.
but that will crop up at some time during the year, and that's probably your biggest negative to valuations is that markets get sort of over the top on that. Having said that, central banks have been pretty adamant that interest rates aren't going up, and they're not going up for a long time.
Mm.
And so it would be it's at the moment it's difficult to see them changing anything this year.
Yep.
It's pretty hard to sort of turn around and say from a credibility perspective interest rates are going up and they're not going, we're going to wait until we see inflation really high before we sustain inflation. Mm-hmm. And by the way, central banks are all expecting a bounce back, a very short-term bounce back in inflation later on this year. So yep. it's pretty hard to then turn around when that short-term bounce does happen and then change their outlook.
Yep, sure.
So, okay. So that's your number one, liquidity. You have a similar factor coming through from corporates are out there lending. So corporate debt's been pushed down to you know, extremely low levels relative to government debt. Mm-hmm. That was sort of explicitly driven again by the Fed, is that they wanted to keep the lending rates down, and corporate lending's very high. We've got the numbers. The chart there is showing the US ones, but you see similar things within Europe. And also, I guess it's that idea of sustained lower rates means that corporates can handle higher debt.
Yep.
In the meantime,
is this something that's being converted into productive measures, or is it being just used to buy back their own stock?
A lot of us buy back your own stock.
Okay.
Well, and having said that, there's a bit of this debt in the short term was also about keeping the business going.
Yep.
So, you know, the fall away in profits, had to lay off a lot of people, you know, all those types of things. So earnings took a hit, and some of the debt was to sort of to get them through that period.
Mm-hmm.
So that which isn't productive debt at all. That's
no.
You know,
it's just keeping your head above water debt.
Yeah. But we'll see some more. Probably we'll see some more financial engineering going on. Like the rates are just so low that
not
the levels you'd expect.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you've got that. You've got government debt as well. So Biden's looking to at a $1.9 trillion package. You've got Australia's running some record levels of deficits. Not particularly well targeted, but you know that. But they're still certainly pumping as much money as they can into the economy, and right throughout Europe as well. Europe, Japan, China was seeing the same thing. So certainly lots of central bank support, lots of government support. And then that sort of leads into the next chart is, so we've seen this this massive spike in terms of the amount of trading that's going on. So I guess the idea is all this liquidity and all this lending that's being put back into the economy has to end up somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if there's nowhere, if you can't go, you can't travel and you can't
spend money on things
you want to spend money on.
No need to buy a car if you're sitting at home all day.
Well, yeah, so cars, especially secondhand cars, have actually boomed a bit. But anyway, that's, I guess, you can't buy a car if they're not available, mm-hmm. you know, and there's shortages and secondhand car prices are shooting up. So that's certainly meant equity volumes are going up. Now,
just on that as well, though, and I've sort of been following this sort of lightly myself. The interesting part with the millions of shares, though, is that you can have a share that's worth $1,000 and it registers as a share, and you can have a share that's worth half a cent and it registers as a share. And there's a bit of...
Right, within that in terms of
your game stock et al. And, you know, like the sheer volume of and a bit of options as well that's coming in there. So
So the dollar value as well has gone up, of course.
It's
dramatically gone up. And it's interesting as well that the... I haven't got the stats here, but there's some... over-the-counter ones that happen in the US mm-hmm. that are the ones not traded on the exchanges, and they're just the volumes in that are sort of up 10, 15 times higher than their usual levels as well. So it's and Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't put the Bitcoin chart up there, but you know it's just all this sign that there's just a lot of money sitting in savings, washing around that people are just trying to find a home for.
Yep,
and that's ending up in markets. So it's a trading frenzy. The options market, so I've just got a chart here up the top of the call options over the last 20 years, and you can see again that's just skyrocketed, and that's just another one of those factors that's just sort of leading into that when all this liquidity around, you get a lot of leverage out of buying options, so that sort of you can put a small amount of money and amplify your gains and losses,
mm-hmm.
Which then helps to drive that market higher as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
obviously the advent of apps like Robinhood, which gives people really, really easy access, you know, appable, clickable phone usage sort of access to options as well, as opposed
to and also gamifies it so that it's got that whole, hey Tim, do you want another little hit? You know, get another hit of, you know, come and click this button and click that button and
why are you playing games for? You should be paying your house off, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other part of that as well is the GameStop. Yeah, really did establish that whole lottery stuff we spoke about a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
Was that if for all the people who didn't, which is the vast majority of the world, who didn't participate in it, but got to see, you know, here's this guy who made $30, $40, $50 million and most of them lost it all as well. But, you know, there's that whole part about, oh, really? That's how this is a lottery ticket?
It's that easy.
Exactly. Yeah. Not only is it a game, and not only does it keep me entertained, and you know, rather than swiping through Facebook or whatever, I can be doing this or my sports betting, and maybe I'll get lucky and I'll become a millionaire.
That's right. Yeah. You might have missed this one, but you'll be making very sure that you're in on the next one if you can. So fair enough.
So one more reason for pushing that liquidity case.
Yep.
This one probably doesn't have as it's a little bit more uncertain. I think whereas we can look at the government's spending and we can look at central bank spending and we can see that that's got a decent runway to it, the retail side, look, when it does turn, it'll turn pretty quickly. Mm. It's at the moment, it's all one way and it's all pushing up. And it does seem like there's this inexhaustible source of support for it.
Demand, yep.
But it always seems that way in these booms and then at some stage it'll turn. So I can't see an end to it at the moment. And I would argue that the GameStop is going to give it a decent leg of decent sort of push up. At some stage that'll reverse. That's your retail trade. That's your retail trading in the options. So we saw the retail trading just generally in stocks. Then the options, which is sort of adding leverage to it. The other place you can add leverage of, obviously, is margin lending. And so I've got some stats on that up here as well. And the chart on the left sort of shows, again, over quite a long period of time, and you can just see that spike in the that's the change in margin debt in the last few months. So you can just see that that's at basically all-time high in terms of the increase in margin debt. But to put it into perspective, I've got another chart on the right, which is the amount of margin debt relative to the total value of the market.
Okay.
And you can see that that's actually relatively low. So it's bounced quite high, off its recent lows. But
because the market's gotten so big, is that right? The debt's appearing small.
It's a mix. Partly that. The margin debt is generally not that high. So we had that bit. You can see on the change graph. You can see the bit where we had a falling margin debt for a number of years. Mm-hmm. So that sort of dragged it down. The bounce in the market has meant that it hasn't bounced up as high as what we've as high as the increase in margin debt, because it's sort of helping to keep it down. But it is showing that we can still add a lot more margin debt without being in an extreme situation or whatever. So. Yep. And I'm absolutely positive there is plenty of people in the financial services industry, working on pitches to work out exactly how they can get around the lending
rules and rules regulations. And
exactly the right, you know, it's how close can I tread to the line about telling people how much money they're going to make by giving me their
by risking everything.
But that's right. Exactly. So. Yeah. And that is an important point. You know, following the 2008, there was a lot of a lot more regulations around the world put on margin lending.
Yep.
So potentially structurally, it's going to struggle to get back up to that to a similar level.
Yep.
But where
there's a will, there's a way.
Exactly, and the financial services industry is nothing if not innovative when it comes to working on how to get around regulations.
Yep. And it's an interesting point, sort of just giving back to the option sort of side of things, because obviously the Robin Hoods, you know, Robin Hood being the primary one, was a, you know, a standout success up until, you know, recently when it sort of went crunch and, you know, got their own internal issues. But that's probably set the pathway. I'm sure there's, you know, a plethora of people out there building a new Robin Hood 2.0s and 3.0s.
There are other, look, I guess the thing is there's lots of other similar companies. And there's one that has even been out there running ads about complaining about Robin Hood blocking trading.
Yep.
And they block trading. They did exactly the same thing and they're complaining about Robin Hood doing it.
Yeah,
and
sure. So they haven't solved the internal
It's the same issue. But I think as well, the number of downloads for Robin Hood like skyrocketed. Mm. So I guess there's this whole part about saying to you know, I don't want to pick on millennials, but let's just say your average trader, GameStop trader who may or may not be a millennial, if you say to them, here you go, here's this company which may or may not rip you off and all this type of stuff like that, but they're free, or you can jump over here and pay for your trades.
Free always sounds better, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's very attractive free.
I think they've been doing that. It hasn't seemed to slow them down too much. And I think as well, there's for everyone who's going to leave, there's a whole bunch of people who may or may never have heard of Robin Hood before.
Mm.
Yep. And then sort of, yeah, looking at markets and seeing how much all these people made and wanting to go somewhere, and their first stop is going to be, well, these people did on Robin Hood.
Off we go. Just on that, so we've just got a question here from Alec. Over-the-counter markets, OTC markets, how do you track this, Damien? And are you looking at the dark index?
No, I don't look much at OTC markets. We all our stuff we buy and sells in all in the listed markets. The OTC stuff I saw was from, I feel like it was from Jeremy Grantham, maybe.
Okay.
I'm not. It's not an area that we.
Not in our wheelhouse.
We didn't invest in that area.
Yeah, sure.
So more just paying attention in terms of looking for measures that signs that liquidity is really taking off.
Yep. Mm. Okay. Fair enough. All right. Very good. We've got one more here. Just while we're talking markets, if you like. Why does the ASX puke so readily? Fall so readily when US markets do so. Is it sympathetic and or investor algo driven, or is there actually a large inflow of USD into ASX companies that gets pulled and sold? I suppose you've got indexing, haven't you?
That would I think there's certainly markets are a lot more closely aligned than what they used to be, and the top stocks around the world are traded by global sort of international investors, and you know, we'd treat ourselves as one of those. So,
yep.
And that's the MSCI World Index, and so you will make assessments. You'll go, well, if the US has fallen by 1%, then I've got some stocks in Australia, which if I can still sell those at the same price I could yesterday, I'll do it.
Yeah, sure.
And so, you know, and currencies make a big difference as well.
I was gonna say that.
So it's all got to be everything's got to be brought back to the same back into the same currency. And so what you will see is those top stocks will be defined by international.
Mm-hmm.
The lower you get, the less likely it is that it's an international one, and the less effect. But then it starts getting correlated to the fact that, well, if the ASX is down 1%, those stocks are
probably down 2% or something.
Yeah, that's right. And more volatile.
Yeah, fair point. Okay.
Okay, so margin debt.
Yep. So when we move on to not valuation.
Finishing with
liquidity.
Yeah. Yep. So on the liquidity side, I guess where the picture I'm painting is that we have scope to increase margin debt.
Mm-hmm.
There's options. It's hard to see how much more they could do on options, but maybe they can.
Yep.
You know that. And then similarly, I would have said the same thing with just general retail trading, but maybe there's this sort of post GameStop wave of new investors. There's Biden looks likely to get up, another $1,400 check that he's going to send out, and so quite likely that'll all sort of push out You know, there'll be a bunch of people with a $1,400 check looking to work out what option they can.
Absolutely.
How can I turn this $1,400 into $14 million?
How do I do what that guy did?
Exactly.
Yeah, sure. Okay, very good. So a wall of liquidity potentially remaining and also coming. So we'll
yeah, but with the, I guess your big disclaimers, your big worries are in terms of what could reverse that liquidity is one is higher interest rates mm-hmm. sort of causing issues. And we're not expecting to see that at all from the central banks, but maybe there's an inflation scare that pushes them up.
Yep.
And then your second one is the retail trader. When do they get bored and move on to the next thing or decide
move back to crypto.
Yeah. And you'd think usually it will be a, that'll be a gradually, that'll be like what's the statement on when how you get broke, gradually then all at once.
Oh, right.
But it doesn't seem to be slowing down at the moment. So, there's a, you expect still to stay high.
Okay.
So the not valuation side. So we've got this great, in terms of having a bull market, you've got this great sort of source of liquidity. On the valuation side, it doesn't look so good. So I've got a chart up here, a little bit complex. I'll explain it because it's gone through about two or three iterations past what you might usually see.
Okay.
So there's a chart which we showed ourselves quite often where we look at the price of the stock market compared to its next 12 month earnings. So the forecast earnings versus the price, and you look at those, and these are on all time highs maybe not all time, but same highs as what you would have seen in the tech boom and way above its usual levels. But then there's an argument that says, okay, well, this year's earnings and last year's earnings are distorted,
yep.
And so we need to go a little bit further out. And so and that's what I've done with this chart is I say, okay, well, let's go from 1 year to 2 years further out. So that the forecasts aren't very good from analysts at that stage,
mm-hmm.
but at an aggregate level, it gives us a decent
picture.
Picture about how people are pricing things.
Okay.
So that's the first step. The second step then is say, let's break that up into various levels so that the blue line in the middle is your median stock. And then I've got your most expensive 10% and least expensive 10% is the black lines.
Okay.
And your middle 50% is between the gray sections.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see on those, if you look at those top ones, what that's basically saying is the top 10% of companies you got to pay about 45 times earnings for to buy in, which is basically where we were in 2000s,
right.
in the tech boom,
yep.
Sort of back those same levels. Again, at the 25th percentile, the most expensive ones, and at the median, it still looks expensive. What's interesting though is, and where there is some, there are some opportunities on this next slide, which is at the bottom end of this graph. And so this is showing the stocks at the bottom 25th percentile,
mm-hmm.
and they're actually looking
pretty reasonable.
Yeah, you wouldn't say it's a great opportunity, but it's certainly it's not off the end of the chart, where most of the other ones are.
Mm.
And it does say that there are still pockets of value you can find. It's not as if every single area's been bid up.
And that's something sort of even through last year, wasn't it? It was, and we've done shows on it where, the FANG stocks and a lot of the, COVID, insulated, for want of a better word, not really immunized, but were the ones that were largely dragging the index up across the board because they were bidded to high heaven. And and most of the other companies, you didn't really know about at the time because we were in the middle of a pandemic. Is that sort of the case even now, or is it sort of the rest of them sort of starting to catch up with the big techies and COVID proofs?
Look, there's what was interesting with it was it was the stay at home stocks that really sort of got that sort of going.
Yeah,
and some of those were pretty boring in terms of the stuff they did.
Yep.
So you did have some that were your Microsofts and Googles and Facebooks that were more exciting from a growth perspective, but then at the other end, you had your supermarkets and some just really really basic everyday
typically boring stocks.
Yeah, that just did well in because they weren't affected by the
they're the only ones open
coronavirus. Yeah, and so so now though it's really getting into how much do you trust the opening? I guess in terms of there's some, and we've actually got a comment up there now, just sort of talking about vaccinations and will or won't you get to herd immunity? Mm. You know, our view is that that herd immunity doesn't actually really matter. It's more about saying it's about hospitalisation.
Yep.
And making sure that hospitals don't get overwhelmed. And once you've vaccinated your old people, and once you've vaccinated, or even just not even all your old people, once you've vaccinated 70-80% of your old people,
yep.
And once you've vaccinated your frontline health workers, the danger of your hospital system getting overwhelmed is actually very low.
Okay.
And yep. At that point, you know, human beings live with a vast array of diseases that we don't try and lock down, you know, the flu, and we don't try and lock down
transmissible
HIV
stuff.
And yeah, you know, all these other things like that, where we're basically saying, well, that's just part of life.
And just manage it.
And yep. So as long as it's not overwhelming your hospital system, you just got to live with these things. And we think you will come to that. Australia, it actually seems like it's a long way away because we've done such a good job.
Mm.
Whereas I think there's in places like the US and Europe where this is running rife already.
It's fait accompli, isn't it? It's the only pathway in front of you.
Exactly. Yeah, and so and at that stage, it's going to be very hard for Australia to sort of turn around and say, look, the rest of the world's all back to normal, and we're going to keep quarantines and all this type of stuff because there are some people out there who don't want to get vaccine shots.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, so it will be a question about once you get to the stage where lockdowns are just no longer considered.
Mm. Mm. And so, and just finally on this one, not to labour the point, but so sectors. So, you know, some examples, if that's not putting you on the spot, of where you might be looking if you were a value investor at this point in the cycle and
yeah.
Felt like there was some something still to invest in and something still
to run.
Yeah,
sure. Look, we added a few cement makers to our portfolio today.
Okay.
That's sort of that type of area, which is, it's not a very exciting area. The stocks are cheap. You know, you can buy stocks at below 10 times earnings. You got some stimulus hopes from, you know, yep. and we've just seen in the US, you know, this power outages throughout the US. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of blame about, is it renewables fault or, you know, whereas it actually looks more likely is actually the gas. It's actually more the gas fault
right.
than renewables.
Yep.
For a lot of the outages. But also, it's that whole thing about, okay, do you need to be spending more money on this? And, you know, here's a great opportunity for Biden to step in and say, that was terrible how all those things went down. Let's go and spend a bunch of money on getting the infrastructure better.
Okay.
And yep. So, you know, those types of companies. But you do need to be careful about, you know, where you're pulling within those. So, you know, I guess they're the types of, we're looking through sectors like that. We're looking through, we have sort of been adding a little bit more on the banking side, not because we actually like the outlook for it, but we think the market's going to like the outlook as inflation starts to increase and bond yields, you get a bit more of a steepness in the bond curve.
Okay.
So that's more of a short term look. We'll sort of certainly be looking to exit that sometime relatively soon.
Okay. Yep.
What other sectors were we? And look, there are some, depending upon where you're looking, there are elements of some of the semiconductor industry that where we've got stocks that we quite like that have got some pretty solid growth behind them, and you can pick them up for below market multiples. So they might be trading 10-15% below the market.
Yep.
So you might be able to pick them up for 15 times earnings. But we actually looking at the growth outlooks and getting quite a good growth outlook as well as relatively cheap earnings.
Because that's been a story that's sort of come out or evolved, hasn't it? There's been this tightness in the in semiconductors around the world. It's sort of everything's run out. And so I guess if there's some, would you call it fringe or secondary providers, they could, you know, they're going to start slurping up that excess demand pretty quickly.
Yeah. Look, the semiconductors, there's partly that. There's partly that Intel has been like the Goliath in the room, and they've made some relatively serious mistakes.
Yep.
Yeah, and so that's opening up. There's also a lot of change happening with the way processes are being run. There's Apple's just released a whole range of different processes that are along the lines of basically saying rather than having one super powerful processor to run everything, maybe we just have a couple of actually not very powerful processors, but they're actually very good at doing individual things.
Task. Yep.
And so, you know, here's one that's just very good at doing photo stuff. Here's another one that's just very good at you know, downloading. And here's one that's just very good at running your phone and or running your thing on a really low power.
Yep.
And then...
I hope they make one for just running Slack, because that seems to blow my computer up.
So I guess the idea with those is that... that's actually really opening up some niche areas. For there's a number of ones who, some of them used to be small and are no longer small, but there's still a number of companies that are sort of medium and large ones that just aren't very large yet, who are just very good at doing one small element, and all of a sudden that might catapult them into much bigger markets.
Mm, okay. All right. Fantastic. Great answer. We've had I'm not sure if this is really in the line of valuation, probably the other way around, but we've got a question here. What do you think about Roger Montgomery's suggestion that this time might truly be different? Top performers such as the FANG stocks, so Facebook, Apple, Alphabet, Netflix, Google, are justified based on never-before-seen moat and sales characteristics. So the other end of the valuation. Although some of those are actually reasonable value, aren't they?
I would argue that some of those aren't too badly priced.
Yep.
This time is different. It's sort of okay in terms of when you look at the whole market. I think in terms of saying this time is different, well, it almost never is.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of looking at individual stocks, it almost always is.
Right.
So, certainly you can grab individual names, and we do think as well. Like if we are talking. The FANGs themselves, I wouldn't automatically tick every single box in that and say yes, every single one of these is going to be fantastic. But there are certainly some stocks out there that have showing, very good growth and have great margins, and it's hard to see the end of the growth, and they're not horrendously expensive.
Yep.
They're more on the sort of 25 to 30 times rather than your
45.
And keep in mind that chart I was showing before, when I was saying 45 times earnings, that's not 45 times last year's earnings or this year's earnings or next year's earnings. That's the year after that. And so if you look at a Facebook or anyone like that on those types of earnings, they're back to sort of 25 or closer to 20. Like they're probably at the top of that grey range is where you'll pick up your Facebooks and ones like that. So you can say, okay, yeah, they're more expensive than the average stock, but they're better than the average stock
in
terms of growth.
So
I can justify those ones. It's the ones where you look at and a lot of them have really interesting stories, and you look at like there's a whole bunch of say things like Nvidia and AMD and chip makers that have got a great story, have really grown earnings, and are expected to keep growing earnings, but they're all priced at 50 and 60 times.
Yeah, sure.
And it's a question about saying, well, I really like them. I really like the output. I really like the outlook and all that type of stuff. But I just can't justify paying that much for it.
Yeah, 5 years time prices for
exactly.
them.
Exactly. Yep. And the one I come back to a few times is in the tech boom, Cisco, great stock. It was like looked as being the arc. One of the stocks that was going to be critical to the growth of the internet and growth of computers over the next 20 years. And so this is sitting back in 2000.
Yep.
And absolutely right. Their earnings, if you go back to 2000, their earnings from then to now are up six times higher. Everything's increased. You look at all of the margins have gone well. They've been stable, all these things like that. Everything you want to tick for a great company, share price halved from 2000 to today.
Yeah, wow.
Because it was just so expensive. It was just priced in so much. And that's where... it is a matter of coming back to getting the stocks that are sustainably priced and being able to really separate that and say, I love the stock, love what they're doing, but I just can't pay that price for it.
Yeah, look, fair enough. Mm-hmm. And just quickly on that second half of the question, there was the the never before seen moat. And just we're obviously seeing now that moats are starting to perhaps crumble. Obviously they were talking before with Facebook, having to and Google, of course, in Australia running into some regulatory and federal strife. And there's that moat may deteriorate if they you know, if they potentially get legislated out of business, do you think, or that's, broken up is the other one?
I guess the side of that as well is there are stocks that and this is actually starting to divert a fair bit out of that thing, but there's stocks that rely on what's called the network effect, and that basically means that if you're eBay's a great example of it, where you say, okay, well, back in 2000, there was a bunch of other people sort of all setting these up, but you need... If you've got lots of buyers, then you can get lots of sellers. And if you've got lots of sellers, you can get lots of buyers. And the two keep adding...
keep connecting them up.
Yeah. Yep. And so if whatever company gets into the lead, everyone starts going, everyone who wants to buy something goes, well, there's more things to buy on that site. That's where I'll go. And the sellers all go, well, there's more buyers on that site.
Yep.
And it just keeps getting... And it's very hard to reverse that network effect. Mm. And that's where, say, Facebook has ended up. Interesting. It's like, you know, once you've connected all these people and you've got all these people connected on your platform, it's very hard for somebody else to come up and say, hey, Tim, you know, why don't you come to my platform?
Come over here.
And we'll all exchange. You, me and mum and friends will all start talking to each other on that. It's very hard. Having said that, you know, we've had Instagram and we've had Twitter and TikTok and a few others start up. So the boat's not impossibly wide, but it is still quite wide.
Big barrier to entry, though.
Big barrier to entry.
Yeah, sure. Mm. Okay, very good. Should we jump across to earnings?
Yes, earnings. So on the bull case, earnings do look good. We've had this, our take is that last year we had a whole bunch of, we had this huge shock come through and everyone sort of looked at their cost base and went, wow, you know, my sales could be down 10, 15, 20% or more. I need to go through this with a machete and just clear out middle management, get rid of all those useless costs that might have taken me ages to get rid of, close down, and then earnings bounce back or sales bounce back a lot faster. And so what we've seen is that earnings, even though sales hasn't recovered, the earnings have recovered. So for some companies. And so what we're seeing is just... impressive growth. This last reporting season was, I don't know if it's as good as you could expect from this period. Much better than anyone would have expected. And when you look at it, and sort of companies are coming up on the median company sort of coming out with sort of 10% growth on 2019.
Yep.
And you're saying, well, 2019 was pre-COVID.
It was a normal year.
Yeah. Yep. So if you can do 10% growth, the back end of a pandemic. Then that bodes pretty well for profitability.
That's just absolutely remarkable, isn't it? And obviously, we're looking at the S&P 500 or the US stocks here, but finding the same with the
chart is S&P. The table on the right is the MSCI World. It is heavily skewed to the US, but there's about 1,000 companies that are reported so far this reporting season, and what was interesting is if you look at the forecasts, the middle column of that is the next 12 month. Revisions to earnings, and so I've got percentiles there. So the worst 25% of companies are still upgrading next year's earnings. So the worst 10% of companies, it's only just a very marginal downgrade. So it was a good reporting season, and that we're expecting that factor will keep going.
Except for Coles, maybe they came out and said it's probably not going to be as good as last year.
No, exactly. There's definitely a bunch of the people who really benefited from the pandemic. Are not going to be. Stay home stocks. Well, and actually, it is. that's saying it the wrong way. The stay home stocks, because there's a divergence between someone like a Coles who is like, okay, you benefited because you happened to be in the right area at the right time. But are people going to change their behavior to keep doing what they're doing? And you're going, well, no, probably not. But once people can eat out again and do all these other things, they probably will. Whereas there are stocks that benefited, say like a Zoom or some Microsofts and other ones like that, that are the stay-at-home stocks. But if people have changed their behavior because of it, and we do think that has been the case, then you can expect that their earnings to keep going.
It's going to continue. Sure.
And
I feel uncomfortable now without 1,000 toilet paper rolls in my cupboard. So I'm going to maintain that rage, COVID or not.
But exactly. That's the thing, though. You know, it's not like you you're still, you've built up your inventory of toilet paper.
Yeah.
But you still are now just buying the same amount of toilet paper. Right. You just need to keep your inventory
stocked.
Yeah,
it gets down to 995. I've got to get it back up again, you know.
And theoretically, at some stage, you might even decide to run down your inventory once you feel a bit safer.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Kids would do a good job of that for me anyway, to be honest. But very good.
So that sort of comes across to these reflation and recovery stories, actually, sort of getting into this next slide, which is... but it's really on that third point, the structural change. And so there's a bunch of different studies out there on that basically show when people are forced to do something different, oftentimes they end up finding that, hey, this is there's actually a better way of doing it.
Yep.
And one of the ones I loved was the London Tube registers where people get on and get off and all that type of stuff. And what they found is if they close a line down for maintenance, then they find that, you know, X percent of people actually stop using that line and go somewhere else because they sort of go, well, you know, okay, it was 5 minutes to walk to that one, and so that's what I always did.
Yep.
But I just worked out that it's 10 minutes to walk to this other one, but there's a really great coffee shop or whatever it is. Right. Or this
life just overcomes and off you go.
Or there's a better transfer or whatever it is. But because I've been forced to change, I actually found a better way to do it. And then that's what we're expecting very much from the coronavirus is that, there's just stuff people have been forced to do.
Pushed out of the comfort zones.
Yeah. It's going to improve productivity on that front. And just the whole part about, okay, we can't afford to have, you know, we've got a 30-person firm. We can't afford to have everyone on. We've laid off five or six people, cut out some middle management, and then worked out, actually, you know what? We did manage to get through that, and we bought a bit of software here. We did a bit of development work there, and now we can actually keep running it with 20% less staff than what we had before.
Mm, okay.
And it's those structural changes that we're expecting to really keep driving that productivity and really drive the profit growth.
Mm.
Then we go back to that point, you know, as inflation goes from being low to being normal, so stocks tend to perform really well in that period. And so we're very much in that period. We've seen, you know, deflation in a lot of areas, and now we're looking at inflation picking up. And vaccines have been exceptional. You know, that 600,000 person study coming out of Israel with sort of 95% fall in the amount of hospitalizations and serious effects. It's hard to think what more you could have asked from, you know,
for such a short-term solution.
Yeah, you can always have more of those, but it was obviously done very quickly, rolled out very quickly. There's obviously a concern about mutations and issues from that, but the fact you've had a vaccine from scratch, not just one vaccine, we've got seven or eight vaccines developed from scratch that solve the problem
in under a year.
It says that mutations, you know, aren't going to be a you wouldn't think
it'd be an external shock.
I shouldn't say definitely should say aren't. you wouldn't think based on that mutations are going to be a problem. All those factors we've just spoke about sort of are all positive. You know, the biggest factor I spoke about was the valuation. Sorry, the most negative factor was obviously the valuation side of it.
Hmm.
Markets can ignore valuations for a certain period of time. They can't ignore it forever.
Yep.
But it does seem as if most of those liquidity factors have got a sort of 6 month run or so. Quite possibly we're at a sort of near term peak at the moment. So, you know, I don't want to say it's all uphill from here. But certainly there's enough positives around that you wouldn't want to be too far. So we're a little bit underweight, but from conservative factors and valuation factors, but
a lot of tailwinds, not a lot of headwinds at present.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep, okay, very good. I might, before we jump across to the investment outlook, I'll just do a shout out to our listeners as well. Feel free to drop in any further questions in the live chat just while we're rolling through the investment outlook. Mm.
And so I should be clear that I'm not saying I'm not saying we're in a new normal and everything's different and we're always, you know, we're in for a permanently higher, it's not like we're reaching a permanently higher plateau, which is sort of, you know, a famous economist sort of said that just before the 1929 sort of all struck.
Yeah, that's it. But the vital signs are pretty well there though, aren't they?
Well,
earnings up. Yeah, all those things we've spoken about.
Yeah, that's right. The valuations. I mean, if you took a longer term view, you'd say no, these valuations they'll be a top at some stage. But it's the force of liquidity.
Yep.
And the problem is, if you step out of the market now, if you went to cash now and said, okay, valuations are far too high, I'm just going to go to cash.
Mm.
And then you do get a massive amount of stimulus from Biden. Inflation starts to pick up. Maybe there's some, you know, energy prices. We're seeing solar prices come down, and we're seeing driverless cars and all these other factors that might really improve productivity over the next 5-10 years. If markets can stay high until some of those actually really kick in, then you might be sitting in cash and you've missed your chance all the way up.
Yep. Sure.
And central banks, that's why central banks are trying to chase you out of it as well. They're trying to chase you out of the cash. So we sort of, our view is you need some exposure. We're not overweight, you know, with all these factors at the moment. We're not, you know, not bullish enough that throw everything out there and go get a margin loan and ramp this thing up. But there's enough out there to say that, you know, you probably should just have some exposure.
Okay, very good. All right, we'll jump across to our outlook, although I feel like we've sort of spent the whole show running through.
I think we probably have. There's not a lot more to add to that. I'll leave those up and then...
I guess probably just a couple of things, and we've spoken a lot about the upsides, and so maybe we just won't dwell, but just spend a second on the downsides. But obviously, locally, we've got JobKeeper, JobSeeker finishing at some point. Who knows when that could be, to our recent lockdown. Maybe it's had a little stay of execution. But
I think it's more that the point, this is a global phenomenon as well, so it's not just Australia that's got so much government support coming in and bailing and helping out. Our view sort of pre-vaccines was, look, it's got to end at some stage. You know, after a year, you know, we expect that these things will all start rolling off and going back to saying where it is. Because we've had sudden this rush of vaccines and this push, and now over the next 6 to 9 months, they're going to be rolled out, or 6 to 12 months, I suppose, they'll be rolled out through most developed economies. We're expecting that all these things are just going to keep getting extended. You know, it won't be in the same form as it was before. So, you know, you won't get the full JobKeeper that you could have got before, and yeah, that'll get rolled off. But there'll be things put in place in order to keep keep everything ticking over until the vaccines are out.
Yep.
And also from the Australian side, you know, there's keep things going until we can call an election and.
Yeah, pass the buck,
anything that might be difficult and might cause problem, let's leave that until after the election. So
it's going to be interesting, actually, that isn't it, the rolling off of stimulus and whether or not it happens, you know, in a timely manner or completely overreaches. I don't think they're going to be pulling it up short. So you know, what sort of effects that's going to have locally and globally. So it kind of feels like the longer it's in place, the more reliant everyone becomes on it.
Oh, absolutely. They're very, very hard to get rid of. And as we've seen from all these central bank policies, the Japanese central bank, you know, 15 years ago started some of these things, and they're still doing them.
They're still doing it. Yeah, that's right.
And so once they're going, it's very hard to stop.
Switch off. Okay, very good. Just finally, John from Jude, will you introduce a more speculative small and mid-cap fund in the future, Damien?
No, not at the moment.
Probably not. Well outside of our large cap and bond and nucleus
what,
name.
Yeah. What you will see coming though is we have a low cost funds popping out that are basically index that you can actually play. You can make changes to yourself. Basically, start with an index, and you get to knock stocks or sectors out that you don't like. And they're very low at a very low cost, and very tax efficient because you get to hold them in your own name.
That transparency.
So that's coming soon. Mm-hmm. But no, we're not planning a speculative fund.
Fair enough. No, stick to what you know. That's good. All right, very good. So we'll jump into and thanks, Damien, for your thoughts today. Really looking forward to 2021 after a fairly flat 2020. What is the question of the week? And feel free to drop this into the chat box, of course. What is the biggest risk? Your thoughts on the biggest risk to a bull market in 2021? We've hit a couple there. Be interesting to see if you've got anything else. And coming up next week, of course, we are, as we mentioned in the show today, we'll be taking a look at the real risk of inflation and potential. Inflation may not be as frightening as an armed robber, as Ronald Reagan once said, but it's likely return to financial markets, which After more than a decade of steady to declining real prices of goods, may come at a bit of a surprise. All signals coming from the marketplace, especially in the bond market, are for faster economic growth and rising rates of inflation. So the question remains, are we in for a short-term inflation shock or something more structural? Tune in next week, Thursday the 25th of February at 12:30, to find out our thoughts on the spectre of looming inflation and what can be done to prepare and take advantage of it. Thanks again for all of those who've watched in live for another great episode, and all of those who've asked some great questions today as well. It's been terrific. I hope you've taken away some great ideas, and if you haven't already, feel free to click like on the video to give us some feedback. And of course, if you'd like to see more of our content, head over to nucleuswealth.com/content. To stay up to date from news from us, follow us on social media. And finally, if you know anyone who gets something out of today's episode, let them know about it, share with a friend, and help our show grow. Thanks again for tuning in from myself, Tim Fuller, and the team. And we look forward to catching you at the next one. Cheers.